there's a reason why they're complex, and you need a certain level of institutional capability in terms of analysis and understanding things to be able to get through the complexity, understand it, and be able to put in a serious bid. Otherwise, the bid isn't serious. It's just some guy taking a run at something.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in.
Welcome back to the show. Today, I'm so excited to announce our guest, Jackson Stith. Jackson, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So everyone, Jackson is a principal of Syndicate Capital, a boutique real estate capital markets firm focused on LP and GP recapitalizations. Prior to founding Syndicate, Jackson enjoyed a 15-year career in real estate development, where he oversaw the development of 9 million square feet of real estate assets. Awesome. Well, that's quite a track record of experience, Jackson. Thanks so much for being here. Why don't you tell us, first and foremost, what does it mean to recapitalize a position, whether it's an LP position or a GP position?
Sure. That's a great question. So recapitalizing an LP or GP position, well, it's really two different forms. So let's talk about let's cover the LP first. The LP, you know, is a person who put money into a deal in the form of equity, maybe a couple of years ago or even more, sometimes in many cases, even, you know, decades ago. And for whatever reason, death, disease, divorce, bad business cycle for their main business, they need liquidity or want liquidity. But the general partner is not ready to sell the deal, or they're not ready to refinance, they're not ready to give this person liquidity. And maybe they don't have the money available, because generally general partners are trying to put new deals together, not buy their old partners out. LP recapitalization then is when a limited partner comes to us and we find a new investor to buy their position, take their place in the syndication or the partnership, however it's structured. On the GP side, it's very similar, except usually, you know, they're not trying to get out of the deal, because probably a bad sign when general partner is trying to get out of a deal, and, you know, they have the responsibility to manage that deal, so they can't leave, right, under most circumstances. In that instance, what you'll find sometimes is general partner has created some value in a deal, and maybe they put in $2 million, and now the net asset value makes it so that their $2 million is now worth, you know, $6 or $7 million, and they want to take out some of that equity that they've managed to create for themselves. So they have a war chest to do other deals, or it could be anything, you know, buy a yacht, whatever they want to do with it. But often it's to do more deals in our observation.
Awesome. Thanks. And so I really like how you frame that. So for the LP investor, oftentimes you said death, disease, and divorce are some of the common triggers for needing to pull money out. Is that correct?
Yeah. A lot of times it depends on the type of investor. So for the investor that's maybe $1 million, $2 million kind of person in a deal, you know, it's the position we have one right now in California. Position was inherited by heirs that don't even live in the United States. They have no interest in keeping it, and they want to sell the position off because the general partner has indicated that they don't want to buy the position or aren't willing to give them money for the position. And, you know, they don't want to file taxes in the United States, and like complexity for them that they'd rather not have. So that's the case of death, right? When you get into larger ticket sizes, it's usually not, those aren't the reasons, right? If you're talking about a $4 or $5 million ticket size, it's usually a family office or a private equity shop that has decided that they're allocated too heavily in real estate. They're allocated too heavily in this type of real estate, and they have seen the world differently now, and they want to shift money around. So they're trying to get out of this position and put it long into commodities or whatever other kind of trades that they're foreseeing will be the most advantageous for them.
Okay, makes sense. Now, for the GP side, what are some of the reasons why they, you know, I mean, we all know that oftentimes when GPs want to pull money out, they'll do a cash out refi. What are some of the reasons why they wouldn't be able to take cash out via a refi?
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of times they can, right? But firstly, I'll say this is best, most often comes up for special situations. So midstream construction recapitalizations, where they put all their equity, all the equity in, because they just want to get started and they didn't want to mess around with trying to raise equity and they had the cash. And now they're hunting for other deals and they need a war chest to do that with, right? I have working on something down in Florida that's exactly that situation. Another situation will be they put a deal together 2 or 3 years ago. Maybe it was, you know, heavy value add or refinance, and then you have compression, or not refinance, I'm sorry, development. And now you have compression of cap rates. They've created a lot of money on paper and they'd like to take that out, but perhaps they really like the debt that's in place. Perhaps they're not far enough along where they feel like it's worth paying the repayment penalties. Perhaps it's cross-collateralized with other assets. So it's going to make it very, very complicated to refinance that asset. I mean, there's a whole host of reasons why this might be the correct solution for them.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for that overview.
Sure.
Very helpful. And I know before the call, you talked about how sometimes you've had these clients who've had like an aha moment. So can you just speak to that, like how this is eye-opening for people?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, not to get too wonky and nerdy about, you know, real estate syndications, but they're a structure that's been around since basically the 1930s in the United States. And part of real estate syndications is one of the hallmarks of it is a lack of liquidity, right? A lack of liquidity for the investors. You put your money in and you hope that the sponsor sticks to their word that it's going to be a 5-year investment, a 7-year investment. However, the market cycle doesn't care, right? The real estate cycles don't care. When you start that investment, it might be the wrong time to sell. You might be in the midst of a pandemic. You might be in the midst of something else going on. So part of what we're trying to do is, you know, really educate the market to some extent that it is actually possible. A lot of people just baked into the mindset that going into a real estate syndication, you're stuck. And that's not necessarily the case. 99.9% of the times, you need the general partner's buy-in to allow for recapitalization of your position as a limited partner. But it doesn't mean that it's impossible, right? So for example, we have, and this was a GP-led recap, and it wasn't a recap of the GP's equity. We were approached by a real estate operator out of the West who has 3 positions of various size. One's like 1.6 million, one's 1 million. I forgot what the other one was. And these are all LPs that are in their deals and they're not in a place where they can refinance to provide liquidity to those LPs. And those LPs want out for whatever reason. And it's not because of the deal. It's because they have other things going on in their other businesses that are demanding resources that they don't have access to. So they need that liquidity, right? And so in those cases, they're value add deals where they're in the middle of value add. So in a value add deal, you have to get through the value add, do the work, release, and then stabilize a bit. And then you can go for refinancing. They're not there. They're several months away from that. So this guy needs liquidity now. So, you know, when they came to us and they said, look, we're really glad to like know what you guys do. This could be a potential solution for us. It was palpable in their voice that for them, it was like, oh, wait, this is exactly what we need. Because they were thinking like, how do we refinance this debt in the middle of value add process? We're not there yet. You know, it's going to cause all sorts of trouble. It's not even going to be possible. Maybe we have to bring in some crazy high risk, high interest rate preferred equity to do this. You know, they were thinking something else, right? So, you know, I think it's largely a tool that is undiscovered in the market because it is complex. And I think a lot of that goes back to just the history of syndications and just, you know, people just assuming the assumption is you're in, you can't get out, right? Unless it's a very special circumstance.
For sure. Yeah. I think that's really valuable service because, you know, that's something that people talk about generally is that they're illiquid, syndications are illiquid and you shouldn't count on your money. And yeah. And so it's nice to just, everyone should just be aware that there are ways to, you know, recapitalize, as you say. So just so that people know kind of the box that's available. So is there a floor for what amount you would recapitalize?
Look, we try, So we take every phone call, first of all, I'll say that. So if you have a $100,000, $250,000 position, something like that, give us a call. We know people and groups who buy those sort of positions, right? And if it's fairly straightforward and not too complex, and everybody that's involved, you know, underwritable, I guess, would be the right way to put it, then it might be a possibility. However, we try to stick to $500,000 or more because we are registered reps of a broker dealer out of New York, because these things are technically securities. So to be compliant legally with SEC and FINRA, you need to trade these things as securities. And, you know, because of that, there's anti-money laundering due diligence that has to be done to the parties involved, you know, make sure there's no one on terrorism watch list, so on and so forth. So all of that, you know, costs money. So the juice has to be worth the squeeze, as the expression goes. The lower you get in dollar size and ticket size, the higher the commissions are for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's just helpful just for the listener.
Yeah.
May, you know, want to try something like that.
Sure.
So what are the time frames like for, I'm just curious, like if someone's like, I would like to find a replacement equity partner, how long can you do it in?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Sure. Okay. So again, it depends. I want it to be caveated with how hairy is the deal? What's the situation? How long will it take me to understand it so I can explain it to other people? If it's a straightforward deal, there's not anything crazy going on. You know, we just got three bids back for a position and it took, I don't know, 3 weeks to get those bids, 3-4 weeks.
Okay, cool. And, you know, we were talking about what the buyer might be looking like. So what, who are the buyers of these recaps? Like who might want to put their money into an existing deal, and what might the motivations be, and what might their conditions be?
Right. So look, the groups that we deal with are professional private equity with a dedicated platform for secondaries, right? And they're the serious buyers in the market. You know, I see all the time dealing with clients, well, this guy over here who, you know, made a lot of money with his landscaping company says he'll pay twice what your private equity go. Okay, sell it to him. And then months later, they call me back and they go, yeah, he wasn't real. And I go, yeah, no kidding, right? Like there's a reason why they're complex and you need a certain level of institutional capability in terms of analysis and understanding things to be able to get through the complexity, understand it, and be able to put in a serious bid. Otherwise, the bid isn't serious. It's just some guy taking a run at something. So, you know, the buyers, especially on the LP stuff, the GP recapitalizations is a different story, but on the LP recapitalizations, they're dedicated platforms. We know these guys. Took us, you know, a year and a half to find all of them. If there's more out there that we don't know, have never heard of us, please call us. We'd love to put you on the roster. And, you know, it's basically private equity with a dedicated sort of platform to buy secondary positions. Some family office will look at them, but I mean, they don't typically transact, right? Like they're interested in looking at stuff, but it's such a niche sort of discipline that it really takes a kind of a dedicated platform to be a serious buyer.
Okay. And so why would these private equity firms even have a platform for buying secondaries, as you say?
Right. So there's a few reasons. Firstly, so most real estate deals have a hold period, a stated hold period. So if you bought it, if the deal started 3 years ago and the hold period is set for 5, right? Well, then you're 2 years away from the major liquidity event, which means that you juice your IRR, you juice your returns on that position. A second reason is you, as the buyer, get to see whether the sponsor has executed on the business plan, right? If you're putting your money into new deals, then Those are projected returns. And you're basing your decision a lot on what has the sponsor done before? Is he or she good at executing their business plans? Do they know what they're doing? In this case, you can look back in time and say, this was the original offering memorandum. This was their business plan. Where are the actuals against the projections? And really get a good view of what they've done. The third is, in all candor, a lot of these positions get sold for discounts to NAV, to NAV, to net asset value today. Not necessarily to the original basis, right? Someone may have put $1 million into something, an LP, and then 5 years later on a 7-year hold, that limited partnership position is worth, you know, $1.7 million or $2 million. You know, they'll get asked to take a discount to that 1.7 to the original one. Again, caveated with depends on the situation. So you're getting something at a discount as the buyer with a shorter hold period. So you're really now double juicing your returns on that position as opposed to primary deals. And I must say, let me just caveat this. This is for informational purposes only. This is not, I'm not soliciting anybody to buy securities, so on and so forth. I have to say that just to make sure that I've covered here.
So, I mean, because it's relatively attractive, right? Shorter time period, buying at a discount, and which juices the returns. Why is it such a niche market? Why aren't there more people looking at secondaries?
You know, I think there's actually a big increase in people looking at secondaries. It's become a buzzword the past year. And I think that that's largely a result of increasing allocations to alternative assets, including real estate, right? Over the past, say, 10, 15 years, there has family offices, private equity, all manner of buckets of money have been increasingly dedicated to alternative assets. And because of that, because of the relative illiquidity of these alternative assets versus the stock market or bonds or whatever the case may be, secondary markets are going to start forming. And that's all there is to it. And I think a lot of this interest is in funds. You know, if you're in the real estate space and you're a buyer of funds, then, you know, you're buying some fund number 3 at a 2% discount to NAV, something like that. And that's not super sexy, but, you know, it is a discount. If you're in the single asset space, like we are for the most part, we have dealt with some fund positions, you know, you're seeing discounts to NAV at much heftier rates than that. So I think that more and more people are starting to come into the space and more people are starting to discover that there's some opportunity there. That being said, I mean, you have to have the kind of, well, I'll say institutional, I don't mean institutional like a big institution, but institutional in terms of the quality of setup of your team to do it, right? Do you have 3 analysts who can tear through all the pages of old partnership agreements and K-1s and audited or unaudited financials and so on and so forth? You have to have that setup to be able to do that. And that's why I think when you're a private equity group and you're pushing money out already and everything is fine, then creating that platform, creating that setup, dedicating resources, creating that setup to really learning the business, that's a real effort. That's then you're asking people to really take a view on something, right? And be strategic. That's a real strategic decision to go into that. So as I said, I think more and more are going to start making that strategic decision to dedicate the focused resources to do that. But, you know, it's just starting now.
Okay, cool. So Jackson, would you say that at this time as a broker that you have more sellers or more buyers of these positions?
Honestly, how it's been playing out right now is probably more buyers. It's pretty even, but probably more buyers, you know. Yeah, the other vertical we have besides the LP recaps, the GP recaps, and that is a primary raise vertical. So we raise new equity for new deals as well because, you know, we have all the proper licensing and kept getting asked to do it and so on and so forth. And we have the skill set to do it and know the network to do it. So why wouldn't we, right? So, you know, I'd say that probably 50% of our business is recap and 50 is primary raise at this point. But yeah, look, we're constantly on the hunt for new LP positions to recapitalize, constantly on the hunt for new GP positions to recapitalize. The issue is that, you know, there's no central registry of these things. There's no QSIP number associated with them. Like finding them is like finding a needle in a haystack. You have to go hunting for them. Part of, and I'm super grateful that you invited me onto your,
sure,
onto your podcast here, because like it takes exposure like this and the aha moment, like we were talking about, where people are like, oh, wait, we can do that. I didn't realize we could do that. Let's look into this as a solution for our current situation. The more exposure that we get, and just the industry in general, I think the more those LP positions will break loose.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jackson, for sharing all that super valuable information. It's super important for us to know our options, and this is certainly something that could be a valuable resource for many people. So thank you so much. Would you please share with the listeners how they can get in touch with you and anything else you'd like to share?
Sure. So I'm super accessible. My LinkedIn is Jackson Stith, JACKSONSTITH. You can also email me at jackson@syndicatecapital.com. And that's syndicate is spelled with a G, as in gating the syndication. You can also look up our website, syndicatecapital.com, and do a little research on us. Reach out whenever you want to have a conversation. I have a philosophy. I take every call, and it's resulted in a lot of great connections that might not have otherwise taken place. So please get in touch.
Awesome. Everyone, I hope you take the time to reach out to Jackson when it's the right time for you. And thanks so much, Jackson, for coming on. We'll see you next time.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.